This is the IBJ podcast for the week of July 13th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Craig DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. If you've had occasion to come downtown in the last week or so, you've seen that the protective plywood boards have come off the storefronts and office building lobbies. Those were the remnants of the social justice protests and subsequent riots in late May and last month. And downtown looks like it's open for business again. However, it has the same problem it did for March and April. The coronavirus crisis has turned downtown's greatest strengths against itself. The sheer density of the urban environment and the ability to bring tens of thousands of people together to work and play no longer seems very attractive or particularly safe. Downtown is operating under a weird dichotomy for the time being. Public officials, on one hand, are anxious to get the economy moving again, get folks back to work, and get money in the hands of downtown's restaurants and retailers. But on the other hand, they're saying it still isn't safe enough to be in an office or even in a crowd of people without a face mask. It could be months, maybe longer, before downtown is bustling again. Many large companies say they're not rushing to bring employees back. Unfortunately, the wait is undermining some of the businesses that have made downtown such a vital and attractive place and might be their death knell. For the latest issue of IBJ, reporters Sam Quinn and Anthony Shetley took the temperatures, if you will, of downtown's major employers to get a sense of when they plan to bring back a majority of their workers, if indeed they still plan to do that, and how they'll know when the time is right. So, I asked them to share what they found out on this week's edition of the IBJ podcast. Here's our discussion. Joining me in the IBJ podcast virtual studio is Sam Quinn, who covers city government for IBJ. Hey, Sam.
Hello.
And also joining me is Anthony Shetley, who covers technology and small business for IBJ and has a deep, deep well of knowledge in Indianapolis' sports and tourism industries. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we were talking the other day during the staff meeting about, I mean, use a 50-cent word here, the duality of the economic recovery as we head into the fifth month of pandemic. On one hand, we have political leaders who are very anxious to return to as normal a business environment as possible, while at the same time, they're warning us that we still need to take extraordinary measures to protect ourselves. And just for reference, we're doing this interview on Thursday, July 9th. This is the first day of a new health order in Marion County mandating masks in inside workspaces and public spaces outdoors when you can't socially distance. So guys, based on your reporting, what is the attitude of companies right now, those located downtown, as far as bringing employees back?
I would just say from the companies we talked to, it largely seems like most companies are allowing employees to come back if they'd like, right? They can, if they feel comfortable, if they want to get out of their house, they want to use the office, they can. But nobody, it seemed like, that we talked to was mandating yet that employees be back in the office. Lots of people are still being flexible and just playing it safe, so to speak.
It's really interesting to see and talk to the company executives. And it's almost like a schoolyard where all the kids are staying around waiting to see what the others are going to do. You know, a couple told me, or asked me rather, you know, what I'm hearing from other companies, what other companies are planning to do. As if they might join in the dance, but they don't want to go first. It's really interesting. And I think there's a real push and pull in terms of, you know, kind of this almost sense of wanting to bring your people downtown, wanting to bring your people together and help kind of fuel the economics of downtown. But the overarching concern is the health of the employees. And that's, you know, that's a real rub and a real conflict for executives trying to figure this out.
Yeah, I think Anthony and I both asked companies that we talked to if they felt a responsibility to downtown to bring employees back. Obviously, there are still restaurants that aren't open. There are stores that aren't open. And those that are, of course, not doing as much business as they usually do. And so lots of people said, yeah, we care about downtown. It's important that the downtown stay vibrant for when we do return, but that wanting to protect downtown can't be more important than protecting employees.
I was really heartened to hear people like Paul Knapp, CEO of Young and Larimore, one of the city's bigger ad agencies, talking about, you know, putting health of his employees, you know, far and above anything else. And companies are becoming creative too. They do want to contribute to the economy. And for instance, the Associate Vice President of Lumina Foundation told me that, you know, they're allowing their employees during virtual meetings to spend up to $20 on carryouts at a local restaurant, and then they can expense that to the organization as a way to fuel the economy. And really, he said, it's not a big expense to us because we would have been catering those meetings anyway. So it's a way we can give back, and it's a way we can give something to our employees too to help them feel better about the situation. And it's also a way for us to keep our employees safe at the same time. There's still a big fear. I mean, there's still a big fear among workers and executives too.
I think one of the big unknowns is the second wave that everybody has predicted at some point in the fall. I mean, are to some extent companies waiting for this other penny to drop before they really decide what's going to happen?
One America, which has about 1,600 employees downtown, told me that they probably won't bring employees back until the fall. They didn't necessarily say like the pending or expected second wave was necessarily the reason, but it just seems like there's so many things we don't know right now. You know, we're still in this first wave, and even yesterday we heard the governor say that cases are rising, and not only cases are rising, the percent of positive cases is also rising, and so that's indicating that more people are getting this, so that's obviously worrisome. And I think a lot of employers just don't see a need to rush back. Their employees are being productive. They're getting work done. They're able to still serve their clients and their customers, even though people are at home and not in office. And they just don't see the need to get back to normal just yet.
July 6th had kind of become this magic date where I think a lot of companies were going to come back. I think, you know, Indianapolis Business Journal was one of them. Young and Larimore was another one of them. But I think to Sam's point, the companies and these executives, obviously they're not healthcare experts. They don't know what they're looking at. And I had more than one executive tell me this, is what we're seeing now in Indiana, is this the beginning of the second wave, or is this a mini spike of the first wave that was receding at one point? And so, you know, Young and Larimore, for instance, was all ready to come back July 6th. They had put in all kinds of systems and, you know, hardware and all these things to allow people to come back July 6th. And then they, like the IBJ, they just hit the brakes. They hit the brakes kind of summarily in late June because of these spikes, and they've retrenched. A company like Emma's Communications, which is on the circle, they had begun a little more aggressively to bring people back and in waves. That's kind of a theme we're seeing, people bringing back employees in phases or in waves, not all at once. And Emma's was in phase 3 of 5, and they were going to have those phases be 2 weeks apart. But the HR honcho said that we couldn't do it. We spread the waves out to 3 to 4 weeks. And then here, once it started to kind of come back in 1st of July, they kind of pumped the brakes too. So we're seeing a lot of that here locally.
I think also what's telling is that, you know, I talked to the city and the state about when their employees are coming back. People working in public administration make up 20% of downtown's workforce. So that's a huge chunk of people working, you know, for the federal government or the state government or the city government. I would assume most of that is focused on state and city government. Both organizations have brought people back, but are doing so slowly. The city didn't even start bringing back non-essential employees until June 15th. And City Controller Ken Clark told me it probably will be the end of July, middle of August, before all employees get back to work. And that's considering that cases stay where they are now, that we move into stage 5. I think everybody's sort of waiting to see what happens there. Nobody wants to make the decision to bring employees back if in 2 weeks the governor is going to say, we got to go back to stage 4, stage 3, or whatever is going to happen. We don't know. We're seeing these cases rise.
I just want to pull back for a second to the 30,000-foot view. So the number of people who normally work downtown, the pre-pandemic number, is about 155,000. Is that right?
Yep, that's what Downtown Indy says, 155,000.
And then during like the nadir of downtown employment in mid to late March, there are maybe 5% of that, about 8,000 people.
Bob Schultz told me of Downtown Indy, he told me that, obviously this is not a scientific poll by any means, but they assumed based on essential workers, so people who were able to be in offices even when the stay-at-home order went into effect, that they estimate only 5% of the normal workforce was actually downtown. He said it was a ghost town here, which of course, if anybody had been downtown during that time, I was one of them. The streets were completely empty. The parking lot I parked in was empty. I mean, that's exactly what it was, a ghost town.
Do we have a sense of how many roughly are downtown now? What percentage of that 150,000?
No, I don't have, no one could really say like who's back. I mean, we're definitely seeing more people on the circle. Things are picking up, but there's no like good look at how many people are back. Downtown Indy is in the middle of conducting a survey of downtown employers to get a sense of, you know, if they're back in the office or what their plans are to better understand what this issue is. And then we'll have a better idea. But a couple weeks ago, when they had the state of downtown, they just did a quick poll of people who were on the call or at the event. And they estimated that about 35 to 40% of the workforce would be back by August and into late summer. But of course, that was 2 or 3 weeks ago when cases were declining. So it's really hard to say.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. Reporters Sam Quinn and Anthony Shutley are sharing what they've learned about how long it will take downtown's biggest employers to bring the majority of their workforces back to the office.
So the problem is you can't just embalm downtown. I mean, it doesn't exist in a form of stasis. I mean, either it's active or it's dying. So what really is stake here? If let's say even 50% of the people who normally work downtown come back, what happens to downtown? What are the repercussions of having, you know, 75,000 people downtown?
So the folks I talked to a couple of experts on downtowns like Indy, and they said that, you know, Indianapolis was sort of built as this commuter downtown, right? We have a daytime office economy. So, right, there are businesses here that serve businesses, restaurants that are open for lunch, coffee shops. And so, you know, if we have this prolonged time period of people not coming downtown during the day, all of those businesses suffer. And they're already suffering because they've seen 3 or 4 months of like no business. And so what we could see is we could see more restaurants, more retail shops, even business services, businesses close up and not be able to sustain this for the long run. And so what happens then is we see a less vibrant downtown.
So Sam referenced a ghost town, which is the current situation. So I will spin forward and tell a ghost story, which I think is something that is very scary for city leaders and landlords downtown. I don't think we're ever going to hit that 155,000 number again. And I've seen a complete 180 people I talked to. I've talked to Christopher Day, the CEO of local tech company Demand Jump, on 2 occasions. Now, he's just one example of this. He's done a complete reversal. When I talked to him in April, he and his 35 employees were ready to get back downtown. He wanted them back in the office. He wanted to get back to business as usual. When I talked to him last week, they've got about 3 or 4 people coming in on a regular basis, semi-regular basis. And he told me that they're looking to downsize. They have shown that working remotely is so effective and productive. And, you know, High Alpha also told me, they're a venture studio, also told me that makers, people who make things, and reporters would fall into that class, are actually more productive, they found, in a virtual at-home situation than they are at the office. So Demand Jump, which has about 6,000 square feet on the circle, is now very seriously considering a smaller space. And I think that quite a few companies, particularly in the tech sector, will be looking at that as they've redefined the work at home situation and parameters of that and what that can mean for the company. So, you know, I think the city probably better start thinking about this, because I really think that, you know, once, you know, we get a vaccine, that the people that are going to come back are going to come back. The fact that everybody's at home now is a semi-temporary situation. But the more overarching and long-term concern is that some companies have found how well they can execute virtually, eliminate a lot of that office space expense. And, you know, we're going to, as a city, we're going to have to figure out a way to fill those gaps on a long-term basis. And that, to me, is a much more serious matter than is the next 6 to 8 months, basically depending on when we get this vaccine and people start coming back in mass.
Yeah, my concern, and maybe this is just too apocalyptic, is that there's a real threat of a death spiral. I mean, if downtown workers are slow to come back and then restaurants and retailers close, doesn't downtown become a less desirable place to be? Doesn't that then chase out some of the people who had decided to move downtown, which then further shrinks the demand for space, which then means even fewer amenities? Should I just go back on my meds, or is this a real possibility?
I talked to somebody who they are economic planners. And so they sort of look at downtowns, and they're studying downtowns across the nation and what they're experiencing right now. And he said, you know, I think we're going to have a few, like a probably a hard 12 months. The next year is going to be difficult. We don't know when a vaccine is coming. We know that there's all this talk about a second wave. So probably we're not going to see the office, which is, you know, offices are a huge anchor to downtown, especially Indianapolis. We have 11 million square feet of office space here. And the vacancy, I think, is only like 15% right now. So, you know, we're mostly full. He thinks we will rebound, right? We'll get back to where we are. He thinks we'll have, you know, there will become some companies who say we don't need office space anymore, but they believe we're not going to see like a huge exodus from downtown. People are still going to want offices, just even if people are in them every day, to have them for meetings, to have them for staff retreats, things like that. So he didn't seem as apocalyptic as you, Mason, but of course that's just one opinion. So
here's the thing I want to ask Anthony, because there's an extra element to this outside of, you know, just the interaction of retail and office, which is that, you know, downtown is really underpinned by the tourism and convention industry. And, you know, a lot of these retail offerings were supported by those when they're not being supported by downtown office workers. Right now, that stuff's almost all off the table. Is it really going to depend on the city's ability to get people back into the convention center?
Yeah, and sadly, I think those will be the last things to come back. You know, I think people will start coming back into offices. I personally would be a lot more willing to go back and work in the office than I would be to go into a large event, whether that's at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Lucas Oil Stadium, or the Indiana Convention Center. So, you know, I think that those are going to be lagging indicators, if you will. Those will be the last things to come back. And so, you know, the city has to reckon with that. And as you kind of think about this from a business standpoint and from a healthcare standpoint, I think most people kind of think that the vaccine is going to be a magic bullet. And I have thought that myself. But we're talking about eradicating a disease that is extremely widespread, probably more widespread than any of us know. And we also know that there are people who won't get the vaccine. And perhaps more people than the national average in the state of Indiana might not get the vaccine for various reasons. And so we even see things like the bubonic plague pop up from time to time in certain parts of the world. So to think that we're going to get a vaccine and we're going to completely be in this clear or immediately be in the clear is a pipe dream. I think that we're probably going to be dealing with this issue a year from now, as sad as that is. So, you know, when and how the convention center and the sports industry come back is really a guess at this point. You know, you're seeing the sports league struggle with this mightily. And I'm not even sure they know what the end game is. I certainly don't know what the end game is. But we have built this city on sports and tourism. Let's be clear about that. There's a huge investment in sports and tourism. And eventually, I think we all believe that the coronavirus will become a non-factor. And I don't think it'll ever completely go away, but it'll be a non-factor. And, you know, there's just too much infrastructure and there's too much pinned on that investment. And I think eventually there's enough momentum. And I think the same holds true for downtown. I really do believe there's enough investment. There's going to be enough horsepower to kind of pull this thing slowly through. It may not happen as quickly as we like, but yeah, there's just too much apartment inventory. There's too much office inventory, sports infrastructure, convention center product. So I think there are a lot of players with a lot of horsepower who have a lot at risk here, who will work hard to bring this thing back.
When we talk about the major employers downtown, who is that and what are their strategies for bringing employees back to work? Like the obvious one, for example, is Eli Lilly and company.
Eli Lilly said even back in May that they would allow employees to work from home until 2021. So that's a big hit. Salesforce nationally has said they will not make employees come back if they're not comfortable with it. So One America is a huge, huge company here on the circle. They're looking at fall, but even then, there's no set date. That's just what they have in mind for now. So those are some of the three big ones.
You know, in football parlance, I think we would call some of this stuff a Hail Mary. You know, I hear companies saying, well, we're going to come back in the fall. And I ask myself, and I'm certainly not a health expert, but what's going to change between now and September? We're certainly not going to have a vaccine. And the bigger the company, the bigger the problem. We've talked about this on a previous podcast, and I'm not picking on any one company, but companies like Lilly and Anthem and One America, they have got employees in very close proximity. They have many, 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 many employees on a single floor of their building. And in recent years, a lot of large companies have made cubicles smaller, walls lower, and areas more compact. So, you know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure. That's really going to have to be changed to materially make it safer than it was back in March. Because what else has changed? Nothing. And some companies have. I mean, Young and Larimore, for instance, now they're a smaller company. Let's be straight about that. They have fewer than 70 employees. But still, they have put in systems, touchless door entries, plexiglass, and on and on and on. We know that people are using computer devices to alert people of how many people are in a certain area and all these other sorts of things. And all of that is at no small expense. And I think the puzzle is two-part here. One is the big companies, which are, you know, easy to look at, easy to point at their impact. You know, the Lillys and Anthems and so forth. But there's an awful lot of small to medium-sized companies downtown, an awful lot of them. And I cover tech. And if you think about Hi Alpha, which is an incubator and a venture capital firm, you know, they have spun off dozens of companies that are start out at 5 or 10 employees and grow to 20 or 30 employees. And, those companies, too, are having a reckoning in terms of what to come back. And really, they're in some ways a better situation to stay away because they're smaller and nimbler. But when I hear companies say they're going to come back in September or even January, what's going to change? I would say nothing. In September, we could be in a worse situation as the cold and flu situation sets in.
You mentioned situations where big companies have a lot of employees on a particular floor. I kind of like to think about this as the revenge of the office cubicle. I mean, everybody was so excited about creating flexible space, you know, including us, you know, where you could go all over the space, you know, pick the place where you wanted to write your story, pick the place you wanted to eat your lunch, pick the place where you want to have a meeting. And I'm assuming maybe you guys are hearing something different, but, you know, it's a lot easier if employees just stay in one place.
Mason, some of these companies don't even have assigned cubicles.
Right,
exactly. Eli Lilly is one of those companies that does what they call hoteling.
Yeah.
You come in and just grab a cubicle. And a couple of tech companies have that set up too.
I even heard a national report about cubicles like suddenly surging in demand because so many places don't have them currently. And now they're looking at bringing their employees back and there's nothing separating them from the person who sits next to them or behind them or whatever. So
the office is really not a very healthy place to be. The coronavirus is not the only communicable disease in the world. And we'll always have communicable diseases with us. And I was talking with a local company called Relocation Strategies a couple of months ago. The executive there said that there was a striking increase in illness among office workers about 8 or 10 years ago when big companies started putting more smaller cubicles in a single space. She said that was no coincidence. So, you know, I just think the whole office paradigm is going to be rethought, have to be rethought, to make it a better, healthier place for its employees. I think employees will begin to demand that. They have begun to demand that. And they will continue to demand that. That's not going to change. It kind of gets back to what I said about the long-term ramifications of this. I don't think we'll ever have 155,000 people working downtown. I don't say ever, but in the near long term. I
mean, what are some other things that businesses or city officials or, you know, downtown's many boosters are trying to do to keep this thing afloat and put it in a position to come back?
Well, I talked to downtown ND and, you know, one thing they said was, we understand the stay-at-home orders. We understand that employers are being cautious about bringing employees back. You know, their big sort of message was If you want your favorite coffee shop, or you want your favorite restaurant, or you want your favorite little retail store that you stop in for gifts or whatever else while you're downtown to be there when you get back to the office, we have to support them now. So even if that means you go and get, you know, take your lunch break and go and get carry out there and don't want to sit out there, do that. You know, go and get coffee if you would have gone and got coffee anyway. I think one of the big problems, though, is how many commuters we have. How many people are driving into the city that now aren't doing that? And so are they supporting downtown, or are they supporting the communities they live in? But, you know, one thing the city is doing to sort of combat some of that is launching this marketing campaign. It's $1 million of coronavirus relief funds that are going to be used to market Indianapolis to other cities in the state and try to get Hoosiers who don't live in Indianapolis here, come for a weekend, come and visit our restaurants. I think that there's even up to 50% off hotel discounts that are part of this marketing effort. And so people who don't live in the Circle City are going to start seeing the and hearing these radio and TV ads, even some social media ads, encouraging them to come visit Indianapolis. I think one question we have to ask, though, is if I live in Northwest Indiana and I'm looking for to take a day trip, do I want to go to Indianapolis where I have to wear a mask now? I mean, I just think that's a real question that we have to consider as we're launching this campaign. It will go through Labor Day. So, you know, I think if cases go down, we might see the mask mandate get lifted. But of course, there is no deadline for when that happens at this point.
What a great illustration of the dichotomy that we're dealing with here. I mean, how many people think it's a great idea to be calling a bunch of people downtown for tourist events? I mean, you know, there's such a short-term desire to bring in some money. And it's like, if we just took a little longer view and we all took the steps we needed to, we could probably get through this crisis a little quicker. But I get it. I understand the desire to fuel the economy. I get it. But it just doesn't seem like a great idea. I was watching a bit on the TV news yesterday, and one of the parents who was in for the young women's basketball tournament at the convention center was saying they were staying at a hotel down in Indianapolis. Nobody was wearing a mask. People were congregating in the lobby in tight quarters, and she packed up her kids and left for an Airbnb because of the unsafe environment. It's a tough situation.
Many leaders would argue that if you're wearing a mask and you're socially distancing, you can come downtown and take a walk around. You can go to the Children's Museum. You know, you got to buy your ticket at a certain point for some of these venues, and, you know, RSVP ahead of time. You can't just show up. And that some of these things will be safe. Of course, I think that's just going to be up to every individual person to decide whether or not they feel comfortable.
Guys, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for your reporting and your time.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Sam and Anthony. You can check the latest issue of IBJ for more of their reporting on how long it could take for downtown to get back to its pre-pandemic speed. Also, in this week's issue, John Russell takes a close look at how the federal government dispersed hundreds of millions of dollars in pandemic relief funding to Indianapolis area hospitals and other healthcare providers. In his examination, John notes that the amounts received didn't necessarily correspond with each organization's need. Also in this week's issue, Mickey Shuey checks into how hotels outside of downtown are doing and finds that while they're slowly rebounding on the whole, the properties in the northern suburbs are making up ground faster than the rest. And Greg Andrews explores a major new sideline for shopping mall giant Simon Property Group. In addition to being one of the largest landlords in all of retail, it's now teaming with other companies to buy and operate struggling retailers such as Aeropostale and Forever 21. Three more deals are in the works as they aim to buy Brooks Brothers, JCPenney, and Lucky Brand Dungarees. You can read all these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it's quite a bit easier to get access to all of IBJ's actionable, award-winning business content if you have a subscription. It works out to about $2 per week, so come on. Seriously, that is a pretty solid investment. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making the time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.